financial literacy, and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Rayum.
Hi, it's Frances. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Rayum. Hi.
Hey, Jess, how are you?
And we have a familiar face with us today.
We do. Today, we're actually turning our attention to something that's heartwarming and hugely impactful right here in our own backyard. For over two decades, the North Quabbin Food-a-thon has rallied our support to support local food pantries and families in need. And it's more than just a fundraiser. It's a living example of what small towns can accomplish when people come together with a purpose, Jess. So with us today is someone who's been part of that purpose from the very beginning, at least I think from the very beginning. It's Jay Dean. So welcome, Jay.
This is old home days. I mean, Jess and I have this every day. It's like, it's so nice.
Well, you know, I should prep listeners to know and watchers to know that we're going to flip back and forth between, you know, what it's like to be in the studio with you guys and what it's like to be at the Food-a-thon. So you folks may know Jay. You might recognize his voice from local radio like WJDF, where Jay and I first met, well, so many years ago, to Pure Oldies, which is what he's on now. Or you might recognize his voice from audiobooks you've read because he's a professional voiceover artist. But he's also been a driving force behind this event for, dare I say, 22 years, Jay?
Since 2004. Yeah, I can't believe it's been that long, but 2000 was the first one.
All right, we'll give you 21, head to 22 years now. So I can't wait to hear your perspective on how this all began. What's become of this year's Food-a-thon, and what do they have in store for us this year?
Well, I mean, do you want to know how it started? Or
I do.
Yeah.
Let's start there.
Well, in that time, I want to give credit to someone who's not been involved because he moved out of the area. But there were four of us that were basically the steering committee. Rick Kwiatkowski was the town manager or town administrator in Orange. He and I just struck up a friendship. My brothers and I, of course, ran the JDF station from day to day. And one day I was just talking, you know, we'd like to come up with something that has some impact, that will kind of, you know, something we can do every year. And he talked about something that he had done with a small station. He was a town manager in Charlton previous years. He said, well, they used to do this food drive and yada, 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 and raised a little money. And so I said, well, let's try that. We could do that, maybe block off 12 hours, do like a 6A to 6P thing and see where you can get with it. And my youngest brother says, you're nuts. What are you, crazy? You're going to talk for 12 hours? Who's going to listen to that? I always give him grief about it.
How do you say that again, Jay? You're nuts.
And there was probably more colorful language than that, but at any rate. So I think that all of us were just kind of, well, we play music all the time. How's this going to work? So between Rick and myself, then I said, let's call Carol Corville at AOTV, who runs the public access station. The other person that came on to the committee is a name that might be familiar to the Western Mass area. Amy Clark was the executive director of the Franklin County Community Meals Program. So because it was the biggest entity we were aware of, I think we started off maybe with four pantries. Now it's six. But it was Amy, myself, Carol, and Rick on the steering committee. So we set up the day, got it all arranged. Carol brought some people over, public access has it just exploded too in terms of its technology. But she had cameras that were hardwired through the cable system, which helped us out too. And we did a 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. thing. And we thought, well, it'd be nice if we could get, you know, this is Amy's words, if we could fill up the trunk of a car and get $500 for each pantry. And I think there were four. Well, that first year, we also had Pete Gary from Pete's Tire donated or let us use one of the 18-foot box trucks.
Wow.
We had one at, I think it was Hannaford, and we had one in front of the station in the center of town. We filled two 18-foot box trucks and raised $13,000 in 12 hours.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
That's amazing. You know, people really do care about this.
Yep.
You know, I have a little minor involvement with it this year. And when Jay asked me, I said, yeah, of course I would do this. I mean, who doesn't want to feed people in need and feed families in need?
Yeah.
And yet with the grocery prices where they are right now, I can't imagine a year where this was more needed than this year. I just,
yeah,
it's astonishing. I mean, even commercials for cell phones are coming out with things like grocery prices are up. It's a cell phone commercial, okay? Everybody's using this, but it never hits stronger than when somebody who already is having trouble feeding themselves or their family has to tolerate these kinds of prices. So, you know, thanks for giving us some feel for who launched it. I think off air you mentioned Monty to me.
Well,
can you
that's
talk
what
a little
I just
bit
wanted
about
to say. I don't know, and Jess could obviously fill me in better on this. I don't know how long the walk has been going on, but I mean, it's just, I feel an affinity because everybody gets into that. This is something we can do and this feels good and you help somebody or you don't know who you're helping. I mean,
right.
You know what
That's
I'm saying?
Right.
I mean, it's just one of those good karma things that you feel good about when you're done.
I
kind of bow to Monty in terms of how big that event is. The other blessing we have is that with all sincere sympathies to his family, I just can't imagine. But Jim McGovern has always been involved with us too, and he comes on during the course of the broadcast. I think last year he literally had his cell phone. He was shooting himself on the cell phone as he was walking from his office to the Capitol for a session. But, you know, did his interview with us and talked about his whole thing has always been in this country, this should be fixable. People shouldn't go hungry. It is fixable. And as you said, Francis, I saw something. Worcester County Food Bank and Food Bank of Western Massachusetts both come on and interview with us as well. And I just saw some publicity about the Worcester County Food Bank. There's some sort of a shipment that didn't happen because of things that are getting cut. And it's like, you know, close to $475,000 worth of something. You know that's going to have an impact.
Wow, that's like five cartons of eggs now. You know, Jess, you know a lot about what happens with Monty, I think, right? Can you talk a little bit about that?
He's been doing it about 14, 15 years at least, and he does a 43-mile walk from Springfield to Greenfield is where it ends up. And as you were saying, Congressman Jim McGovern does the whole 43 miles. The other thing that's really great in this area is all the local legislators get involved. Like you'll see Lindsay Sabadosa out there. You'll see Joe Comerford. The mayors in the cities will come out during that day where they are, East Hampton Mayor Nicole LaChapelle. They all really get involved. And this walk that Monty does is just a really big part of the Western Mass Food Bank, the budget. Because it raises just so much money. I think it was close to $1 million last year.
That's amazing. Oh, for folks who don't know Monty, let's give him a last name.
Monty Belmonte.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's amazing the amount of money that, as Jay pointed out, you can actually have a part in doing. You can do something about this. This is an opportunity, a real opportunity, to get involved in some way. We'll talk in the second half, I think, about how people can get involved, but you could volunteer, you could donate, right? You could participate in different ways, but you can make a difference in your own community.
What's amazing to me is that when COVID hit, the food collection part of it kind of went south, and yet it kind of averages around, I don't know, 30,000 every year, it seems like. But that first year in COVID, it just went to monetary donations. Mm. You got like $50,000
Amazing.
In that year. Yeah.
Do we have a goal for this? Do we have a
No, that's it's funny
benchmark?
That as part of the long-standing steering committee, people always bring that up and I get kind of irate.
Well, happy to make you mad, Jay.
Why don't you calm down, Jay? But the thing is, the problem has been, if you say, oh, we've got a goal of this amount of money, you know what the first question from the media is? Did you hit your goal? No, you know, it's not important. The goal isn't important. To me, the importance is just give what you can, and it doesn't matter whether it's a dollar or some of the businesses that cut checks for $1,000, $2,000. It doesn't matter. Every little bit helps, and it's just that, you know, I guess it's just a matter of, I realize people are always goal-oriented, but this, to me, was always, we just try to raise as much money as we can in 12 hours' time. And that's
well,
why
you know what your answer can be, Jay.
What?
Yes, we hit our goal. We fed a lot of people.
Yeah.
That's the goal, to feed people.
I know we're going to get to it in the second half, but I do want to just let people know what is the date of this year's event?
It is Tuesday, May 20th, 6 a.m. till 6 p.m. It's always the third Tuesday in May, Tuesday, May 20th.
And what's your goal this year, Jay? No, I'm kidding. I'm teasing you. I'm teasing you, I promise. But, you know, when we've had like a lot of the legislators on talking about this, and I think it was East Hampton Mayor LaChapelle who said, like, when she was a kid, she had to take advantage of some of these services. So this is a thing, like, you never know when you might need help. So if you are able to help when you don't need it that year, that's wonderful. Because, you know, by next year, you could need it. You don't know.
It's funny, many people will, although the food donation part of it has kind of stepped down, people still bring bags or whatever. And it's funny, in the first couple of years, we were always moved by people who wanted to bring diapers, you know, diapers or products for, you know, women's products or pet food or, you know, just things that you wouldn't necessarily think of.
What kind of women's products, Jay?
Help with.
What kind of women's products could you get specific?
Well, no, I think people would bring.
I'm
saying that people would think, you know, this might be something that they just can't afford. You know, it's,
right?
Yes.
I don't know.
Yeah,
you know?
At the holidays, we usually do a pet food drive, and it's very popular that people just come and leave cans of pet food, you know, and pet blankets and things, as long as they're new and clean. And I know there are criteria, so. So just before we go to break, Jay, can you tell us a little bit about how many pantries are involved and the different kinds of ways people can donate? They can donate monetarily. They can bring food. Give us some details about that.
I would say the food part of it, you could probably drop off things. We'll have crews both at the Hannaford and Athol and the Market Basket as well. It benefits six pantries. The one that would be most familiar to people in this area is the Franklin County Community Meals Program, because they have several community meals and pantries as well. They have a pantry in Orange. Also, the Athol Salvation Army, St. Vincent de Paul of St. Mary's Church has a pantry that they maintain. The Our Lady Immaculate Church group in Athol, several churches, and they also put together a pantry where they set up, you know, things for people to pick up. The community food pantry at Athol High School, Shirley Mitchell has, over the past couple of years, has just done amazing work to get the kids involved, and they see how important it is. Also, the Wendell Good Neighbors Food Pantry, and they are also our fiscal sponsor. We, at one point, as a collective group, were going to try to make it a 501c3 foodathon, quote unquote, but it only happens once a year. So it's more foundational than it is, you know, a nonprofit. So they are the fiscal agent. So that's it. Yeah, that's the six. Salvation Army, Community Meals Program, Wendell Good Neighbors, St. Vincent de Paul, the Athol High School, and Our Lady Immaculate Church. The easiest way for people to donate is to, if they want, and they can do it right now, is to go to nqfoodathon.com. And on that website, there is a Venmo and a PayPal portal. And anything is appreciated, you know.
We're going to have much more coming up. But first, Francis, can I get your phone number?
Of course. It's 413-773-3333.
And you can go to hugyourmoney.com. We'll be back with Jay Dean and the money doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, with part two of Financial Fitness on WHMP.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Franklin County Technical School. We build futures. Visit fcts.us or call 413-863-9561.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, and special guest Jay Dean. Hello.
Hello.
Hello, hello. Okay, Jay, I have to ask you for some fun things, you know, about what it's like to be at the Foodathon. What would surprise people about what happens behind the scenes?
Oh, boy.
If anything.
No, it's, you know, it's funny from the radio perspective, and you both can talk from this perspective, too. You just get in front of the mic and kind of talk. And to be honest with you, the TV part is pretty much the same, although, you know, from the control room, sometimes something will come over the speaker and say, you got to wrap it up. It's almost 15 minutes, you know, or no, it's a lot of fun. It really is. And, you know, the thing is, I never would pay attention to on the radio, obviously, is you see the monitor and you can see what they're shooting. You know what I'm saying? So you can move around while somebody gets into their seat. And, you know, it's TV is kind of much bigger on screen than you think it is. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's,
you know, but no, TV is a different game. TV is a different game for sure. But you interview people, right? Can you paint a picture of what this Foodathon is like for somebody who's never seen it?
Well, we're going to have some segments, obviously, that so we can take a break from talking for 12 hours straight. And I'm very tickled that Ask Me Now is going to be part of one of those musical breaks. That's going to be great stuff. But no, people come in, and like anything else, you know this, it's stories. I mean, think of all the people that have come through that have, you know, for Hug Your Money. It's the stories that are compelling when people come in and say, you know, the first or second year, and sadly, this gentleman's passed away. But he was a younger man, very handsome. He was a construction worker, heard us do the broadcast, came down to the station and said, I want to do this. He cut a check for $500 and left it with us.
Oh, that's
great.
He went away.
You know, a big, burly, handsome guy. Came in maybe an hour and a half later, crying. I didn't do enough. He gave us another $500.
Oh.
The stories are just, you know, there was a time when I had to eat, you know, little noodles and, you know, I want to do this. It's been okay for me the past few years. I can do this. I can help. And I'll tell you, by the time 5 o'clock gets there, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, people start to get teary-eyed just because, you know,
It must be something when the donations really start to happen. You have this concept, you know, we're going to get on the air. We're going to line up some guests. We're going to have some breaks. And we're going to hang on the edge of the cliff for 12 hours and hope that people will be kind and generous. And when that comes to fruition, when you start to see those donations rolling in, what's that feel like?
Because as we're talking, I'm forgetting about some of the things that happen as you go through each hour. Carol Corville, who's directing this whole thing, and a crew of, like I said, there's probably 100 volunteers that go around, get the money, count it up, and bring us hourly updates on, you know, how it's going. Yeah. So when you're at like 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon and you're at, you know, $14,000-$15,000, you're going, wow, you know, this came in since 6 this morning.
Yeah.
We have, you know, it's just moving.
I know you have some businesses that are particularly generous, and they may remain anonymous. They may wish to remain anonymous. But is there anyone that you feel that you can, without embarrassing them or calling them out, point to that has gone above, you know, above the over and above the top?
Well, I mean, the obvious one that comes to mind for me is Pete. And I don't want to exclude any other businesses, but I've known and I worked for Pete at Pete's Tire Barns for 6 years in the office. And he's got like 20 tire dealerships all over New England. He treats his employees very, very well. He's very generous to the community. Will buy so much material, Christmas time hams and whatever, and donates it to food banks. But no, each year he usually cuts a check from Pete's for like $5,000 and gets some tire dealerships to kick in. So he's, you know, comes in every year right around noontime with a check around $10,000. It's just,
yeah, that's amazing.
He's just so dedicated to it. And I often will, when we interview him, I think he gets a little embarrassed, and I'd say, you just do so much for the community, you know. It's, and he goes, well, the community's been very good to me and to the company. He says, I got to give back, you know. It's, yeah.
Well, that's what this is all about, right?
And many, many companies take part in this too. And I would encourage people again to visit the nqfoodathon.com. You can see a listing of many of the businesses that have donated. And they do it year in and year out. I mean, cut some big checks. And, you know, you cut a check for $100 and you don't realize how far that will really go to get, you know, to buy the supplies or get the food. But as you said, Francis and Jess, you know, too, right? This year, you watch the news and shake your head and go, you know, how are you going to survive with this? And the reason I love this so much is that it's local money. It comes in and it gets sent right back out to those pantries, divided up evenly.
You have an interesting career as a voiceover professional and as a DJ. You know, can you just tell us a little bit about, like, what made you choose that career? How did that begin?
Going way back?
Yeah, going way back. What,
I think
lit
my
your
mother
fire?
Brought me to WCAT over in Orange, and I saw them playing records. And most people don't even know what records are. But, I mean, it just fascinated me. And I think as a kid, I used to watch American Bandstand and thought Dick Clark was as slick as you know what.
Yeah. Do people recognize your voice in public?
I think some people just know me and they say, oh, I heard you talk about this or that and the other thing. There's been a couple times where I'll go, oh, I know you from someplace.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very gratifying. I enjoy doing it. It's, I know Jess and I talk about this all the time. We recently did the River Rat Race. It was so much fun seeing people just come up to you. And, well, I remember Jason Rushford, he'd come up and say, Jess, I listen to you every morning, you know? So
yeah, I love
nice.
That.
Really nice, yeah.
Well, we were talking the last half too, really quickly. I just wanted to get back to something you said, that the students really get involved. What are they doing to help? I know you mentioned that.
Well, Shirley has a whole crew of kids that just come in to help stack the shelves of things they have there, or, you know, do administrative tasks. And some of the kids will come down, I'm sure, during the food-a-thon and just, you know, we interview them, say, how's it going? You know, what do you find most gratifying about this? Yeah, it's just, here's one thing. I got to tell you this. Since we've been doing this from 2004, and Francis asked me about, you know, people recognizing you. Well, they didn't recognize me necessarily, but I went through the thing at Hannaford, maybe, you know, picking up some groceries. Let's say it was 2013, and I had a food-a-thon hat on or something, and the young person at the register said, oh, I grew up the food-a-thon.
What?
You know,
that's
the
amazing.
Other memory I got to tell you about real quick, unfortunately we don't do this now because of the food collection isn't what it used to be. But the Dexter Park School and Fisher Hill School, which is in the center of Orange, maybe a mile from the center of town, maybe not that far, the kids would put a bunch of food in wagons and pull the wagons down to the food-a-thon event.
Oh,
and there was never a dry eye anywhere when they saw that. and we'd interview the kids. We'd say, you know, why did you do this? Well, some people are hungry, and that shouldn't be.
I know. Oh, my gosh. Kids are the best. Kids just totally get it. How can you get involved in the Foodathon?
Well, in terms of last-minute activities, I'm not quite sure. As we lead up to it, what we do is in the center of Orange, in the center of Athol, when you drive through, they'll be collecting money as you drive through. So as we lead up to the event each year, they're always looking for people who want to maybe, you know, you basically stand in the street and you have to sign some forms to, you know, to sign off on things. And it has to be somebody 18 or older. But, you know, there's that way. I'm sure each of the pantries, again, you can get information, their contact information from the website. They would always welcome any kind of help, too. I'm sure.
If you're a business listening to the show today and you decide, hey, I would like to get involved, maybe do like matching donations for an hour, would they be able to do that? Could they call somewhere to find out how to get involved?
If someone were to come from a business and stop down to the event on that day with a check,
that would be great.
We would welcome them to come in and sit down for a second and just ask the question, like, you know, to create another story. What motivated you to do this? Mm. You know, it's, I just hope we see a lot more people just thinking, boy, yeah, the world is crazy. The news is crazy. Things are getting cut. This is one way I can help.
Well, I know that with rising costs, you know, every family's looking out for themselves and worried about going to the grocery store themselves. But for just a moment, think about whether your big problem is whether you buy salmon or chicken, and somebody else's is about whether they eat or not.
Yeah.
If you just have a couple of dollars and think it's not going to make a difference, all that stuff adds up. So if you're someone that has like an extra $5, like that's welcome, because that adds up quickly.
You know, those are sometimes the donations I think mean the most. You know, Jay, I just want to thank you so much for sharing your time and your lovely voice and your heart with us today. And you have such passion about this.
Can I just drop in the place where they can probably watch it? Obviously, in the Western Mass area and out of the cable system in Athol and Orange, the easiest thing to do is to watch it on AOTV13. That's 1 and 3, not spelled out. AOTV13.org. That will, the entire event will be streamed. And like I said, Francis, if they just watch it, I mean, just becoming aware of it helps, you know, because it might be the thing that just makes the switch flip for somebody to say, you know, that's a good thing for us to donate to every year or on an ongoing basis. Some people do that. They set it up so that they donate $15 every month. Just comes out of there. I mean, you can do that, I think, with Venmo or PayPal.
Yes, and we'll put that information up so everybody can see it. I want to thank both of you for participating in this show and wishing the North Quabbin Foodathon all the best. And until then, I hope we can stay kind and connected and financially fit.
Jay, can we get the website one more time?
NQFoodathon.com.
All right, perfect. Jay Dean, thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Francis Ram, let's get your phone number one more time.
Of course, it's 413-773-3333.
And as always, you can go to hugyourmoney.com. We'll be back next week with another edition of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, right here on WHMP.
Financial literacy and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham.
Hi, it's Francis. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. Let me start again. Sorry, I didn't press play. Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram. Hi.
Hi, Jess. How are you?
I am great. We have a guest today.
Guess who we have today?
Somebody we've had before, I believe, right?
It's not
like
fair to
recurring guests.
ask you to guess, but we've had him before, and I just love it when he comes on because he's all about what we're about, which is education. So we have Justin Lawrence from the Franklin County Technical School right here in Turner's Falls, Mass. Often we have somebody from far away, but we got a local guy today. And he is the coordinator for the adult education program. And so welcome back, Justin.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, that's cool, except it's not morning here, and we forgot to tell you that. So, can you just pick up again with hi?
Absolutely. Hello. Thank you so much for having me back.
You're welcome. Thanks for coming. So, you know, I love the idea of this adult education. And just to give our listeners and viewers a little bit of a background, even though I'd been in town for years, and so has Franklin County Tech School. I became interested in it because I received one of your brochures in the mail. It was an 8.5 by 11, beautiful looking brochure. I thought it came from a college, and it came from the tech school. And I called my boyfriend right away and I said, "Hey, I got this great pamphlet from a tech school, and they are getting it done. I mean, look at the stuff they've got." And it really rivaled anything I've seen from a community college, for instance. In fact, I recently saw an interview with several of the local community colleges on the interview, and they were offering very similar, at least one of them was offering similar programs to what you offer right here at the tech school. So, could I get you to talk to me about that a bit? What do you offer right now for adult education?
Absolutely. So currently, we are the very proud recipients of the Career and Technical Initiative grant. It's from the state of Massachusetts, and it enables us to provide tuition-free education for qualifying adults to train in new career paths so that they can find high-paying jobs, while simultaneously filling holes in the Massachusetts workforce. So it's a beautiful partnership between the state and a lot of the technical schools in the Commonwealth to do just that, provide a really good education, which is what we're experts at, while filling holes in the state's economy, which is great.
Yeah, I think there's going to be more and more of this actually. If we zoom out to a macroeconomic picture for a moment, with the federal government pushing more things on the states are finding new ways, creative ways, I think, I hope, to support their citizens. And one of those is to try and get and keep them off of some sort of state aid so that the states can survive on the money they do have. And in order to get that done, helping people get to the next level of income and the next level in their career is brilliant and paramount, and the kinds of things we want to do for people who are prideful and who want to get there in life. Yes, I can see it on your face. Well, you have something to say.
Especially when we're talking about, we talk a lot about college loans and kind of all of that stuff. The field, trade fields just seem so much more, I guess, people are looking to that more, where you're not going to have this huge loan to pay off at the end of it, and you're going to get a high-paying job in most of these trade fields.
Yeah, Justin was just telling me, maybe is it okay to talk about somebody who's not here? We had hoped to have her as a guest, but yeah, okay. So
Of
I
course.
love the success stories, and Justin was just telling me about someone, and I won't rain on his parade. I'll let him tell. I think you know the story I mean.
Yeah, are you talking about Li Ming?
I am. I didn't want to mention her by
Yeah.
name, but she's just one example, but she's a very recent example. So would you share her story with us?
Absolutely. So she came to us as a really hardworking person who was working in the service industry, was, you know, working really, really hard and looking for the next opportunity. And so when she stumbled across our program, she applied and we did an interview. Was very impressed with her initiative and her resolve and her commitment. And so we welcomed her into our auto technology program. She trained for 12 weeks while simultaneously working and raising children and leading a full life. It was a big commitment for her, but she finished really, really strong. She showed great promise in a couple of the technical areas of the training, specifically the electrical systems of vehicles and testing the electrical systems and repairing them. And she had a great aptitude just naturally for that area of the training. She passed with flying colors, did very, very well. If we had a grading system, she would have gotten an A+, but we don't. And when she graduated, she really hit the streets and put in a lot of applications and got a couple of really great offers. The offer that she decided to go with was with a foreign high dollar car dealership in a local dealer, and she's going to be working in their service department and doing an excellent job already of breaking into the industry. So we couldn't be prouder of her and what this shift meant for her, both in regard to earning potential, but also in regard to how scary it might be for some people to leave everything that they've known in regards to work and to step into a new place. And as a woman, to step into a male-dominated field and to be the greenest and the newest person takes an incredible amount of courage. And all of that is being rewarded. All of her work is being rewarded, and we just couldn't be prouder of her.
Well, I love that story. It just ticks so many boxes for me. I happen to know what kind of dealership she's working at, and I have that kind of car. And I can tell you, I can't wait to meet her. I've never met her, but I can't wait to meet her. And I was a little bit of a gearhead when I was younger, still probably am a bit. And so I really love the idea of a woman. I know somebody will write into me about this, but I love the idea of a woman working in that dealership in the service department and doing what she wanted to do. And against the odds, as you said, she started in the service industry. I'm assuming you mean like wait staff service industry, right? Yeah, mm-hmm. Yep. Food service. Okay. And food so service. She's gone from that to something else while she's got kids and going to school, fighting the odds all the way. But I'm going to say something to you because you're too modest to say it yourself. That would not happen without the level of support that she got at Franklin County Tech School. If she had been somewhere else where somebody just said, well, I'm sorry, but you're on your own over here, she may not have made it. Your students fight lots of real life problems like kids and transportation and things like that, which I want to talk to you about. But the first thing that I want to mention that we've never talked about before is something you brought up that I think people went, but what do you mean no grading system?
Is that the technical term?
Yeah, that's the technical term. So talk to us about no grading system. How appealing is that for somebody who's trying to stick their toe in the water here and jump in?
Mm. Yeah. So we, especially in the realm of adult education, we don't waste any time with any of the arbitrary processes that maybe some traditional schools still abide by. We do definitely have benchmarks and expectations around attendance and work ethic and progressing through the curriculum, but we don't assign grades. We are encouraged and actually mandated by the grant funder, the Commonwealth Corporation, to provide industry recognized credentials. So for many of our programs, it would be a HotWorks certificate or an OSHA card. It might also be an industry certificate that would help to earn someone a job in a job interview. And those are what we use to help people progress through the program to graduation. And so they could potentially graduate and leave our program without having earned any, but none of them do. They all really buckle down and do a great job of earning everything that is available to them, which is really great. And it also is important for us that we're not asking them to perform for the sake of performance. Everything that they're working on, everything that they're learning has a real life application and something that will benefit them in their future career.
Yeah, I have to say that Jess brought up, you know, the idea of student loans and the push toward tech school. I'm seeing statistics that say, I don't know if they're true, but I'm seeing statistics that say that enrollment in adult education programs at tech schools outpaced enrollment in community colleges in the last year. That almost wouldn't surprise me, even though community college tuition is now free in the state, right? So to me, that says that this trend that Jess and I have been talking about for years, which is similar to doctors telling their children, don't go into the medicine field because it's just not what it used to be, right? The idea that you're going to go to college, you're going to rack up these student loans in order to get your career off the ground works for a lot of people, but it doesn't work for everybody. And for people who didn't have a college path in mind, to be trapped in a much lower earning job because there's no other outlet, no other path for them, is pretty lousy. So I really love, and let me point out, we need people who do things, okay? I'm, you know, I love my brainiacs, right? But we need people who know how to change a faucet if we can't do it. Who know how to repair your car. And so I think having a place where people get this education, certainly the state funding sees it, right? The grant people see it, Career Technical Initiative, right? The CTI grant that you guys survive on, right? Which is what provides this free tuition for people. It understands that if we train people, they get to a better level and they provide things back to the community that we need right here in our own area. Yeah. Great model. Can you talk to us just a little bit? We have about another minute before break, but can you talk to us about what kind of eligibility criteria somebody has? How much money can they make less than and still qualify for free tuition? And what happens after that?
Sure. So for the CTI grant programs, there are a couple of non-negotiables for qualifying for the grant funding. One is that they live and reside in the state of Massachusetts. One is that they earn less than the poverty level. So for folks who are living in Franklin County, and it's designated by county and it's different in each one. In Franklin County, it's $48,500 a year. And then the last real qualifier is that the person is committed to working full-time in the industry in which they train. So they have to be over the age of 18, but there's no age cap. As long as they fit those four criteria, they are a really good candidate for one of our programs.
That's fabulous. When we come back, I want to talk to you more about what happens if people don't fit in that criteria. They're not kicked out. They can still participate. So we'll talk about that.
All right. In the meantime, let's get your number, Frances.
Sure, Jess. It's 413-773-3333.
And you can also go to hugyourmoney.com. We'll be back with part two of Financial Fitness right here on WHMP.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Franklin County Technical School. We build futures. Visit fcts.us or call 413-863-9561.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Ram. Hi.
I am Justin Lawrence from Franklin County Technical School. So welcome back, Justin. I chopped you off just before the break. We were talking about how people qualify for the adult education program if they fit these four criteria. And one of them is that they have to make less than $48,500 in Massachusetts. I think the federal poverty level is something like 49.1 right now. But if you're above that, or if you don't live or work in Massachusetts, you can still participate in this. Is that correct? How do you do it?
It is, Yeah, absolutely. So we would ask students to go through the same application process just so that we know all of the information about them that we need. And then, if space allows in our programs, we take tuition students into the CTI programs. It's a reasonable $3,000 for the 12-week, 20-hour-a-week training. So it's a total of 230 hours of hands-on learning experience, and they can pay the tuition to us in pieces. We break it down for whatever is convenient for them, so long as they provide a 10% deposit for the class. We'll work with them through the training so that they can make it to the end.
That sounds incredibly affordable for anything like this. And I know that you have job placement help and things like that, but I want to just touch on some of your partnerships because you are local and you have partnerships with the Peterson School, Greenfield Community College. We just talked about community colleges, right? And Mass Hire. So you don't just train these people, you're working to support them into their careers.
Absolutely. So we approach our students as a full, whole person. And so the first thing that we do is to lean into Maslow's need hierarchy and really try to view them as a complete person and make sure that they are at a place where they are able to receive the education that we're providing. So we've got a little bit of financial incentive from the grant funder to help them with some of those daily life struggles that they might be having. Then to continue our work as approaching the whole person, we provide to them a really great program. Actually, Mass Hire provides to them a really great, well-rounded employment education that would include things like resume writing, cover letter writing, how to rock an interview. Each student is assigned a career counselor, and that person works with them one-on-one to make sure that when they graduate after the 12 weeks, they are as ready to apply and interview for a job as possible. The job market is forever changing, and the hiring process is forever changing and can be really intimidating for somebody who hasn't been involved in that kind of transaction in a long time.
Yeah, for
So
sure. That's an
hopefully.
incredible amount of support that I just think it's amazing that you are understanding, you're meeting these people where they are. I love that you said rock the interview so they can learn how to rock the interview. That was just great. Can you explain a little bit more about what somebody experiences? First of all, which programs you offer now, what the experience might be like how many days a week they go. And then maybe give us a little teaser about what might be coming down the pike.
Absolutely. So currently, we offer five CTI programs. We offer them in horticulture, electrical, auto technology, welding, and carpentry and construction arts. So those are the five. Very rarely do all five run at the same time. Usually we have four in progress. And the student can expect 12 weeks. And when we start, we run Monday through Thursday from 4 to 9 p.m. With a little bit of a meal break there in the middle. So they are coming to school. I always describe it to applicants as taking on a new part-time job. It is a 20-hour-a-week commitment, and it's one that needs a lot of devotion because we move so quickly through the curriculum. There isn't a lot of opportunity to make up the work if a student is consistently absent. So
Sure.
when they're admitted, we have to make sure that they have a good idea of what they're getting into and that they're committed to the whole course.
So it's not for the faint of heart, but if you're serious about doing this is a path for you to get there, right? I remember when we first met, I said to you, "Do you have a course in this? I would take this as a homeowner, you know." So tell us, are you allowed to tell us right now what's coming? I put
I
you on the
am.
spot.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll be careful to preface and say that we have applied for another round of this funding. The governor and the workforce board has committed to funding another round. The rounds last 2 years, and so we put in an application for $2.1 million to be able to offer more of the trainings in those five programs I just talked about, but we're also looking to add two additional disciplines. One would be in plumbing and heating, and the other would be in facility maintenance. So we have submitted the application. We haven't heard back if we've been awarded yet, but we're very hopeful and counting on hopefully
Yes.
getting this grant.
Yeah,
But
I
after the 12 weeks, what do you get a certification? Like, obviously, you're not a plumber or an electrician after 12 weeks. You got to go through the journeyman and all of that. So, what is it exactly that you get at the end of specifically those fields? Excellent question. So we offer an opportunity and an initial education so that you can find an entry-level position in those fields. So on completing our course, a student would be able to approach a master plumber or a master or journeyman electrician and to get a job with them as an apprentice with some hands-on and code knowledge. So our electrical students graduate with 150 hours of their code licensure hours that come from the state. So we do our best to equip them with the technical knowledge and hands-on experience that they need to be attractive to those folks.
So at that point, you do give them some support in job placement.
Absolutely. So one of the things that we are sure to share early on in the application process is employment is not guaranteed. Unfortunately, I don't have a stack of open positions where I can place students, but the school and our supporters are incredibly well connected to both our community and our community that's a little bit further away. So Hamden, Hampshire, Worcester, Berkshire County. We have lots and lots of connections. And so we invite employers to come in to speak to students and start to begin relationships and networking. We have career fairs, we have guest speakers, and we have community sponsors and partners who are committed to interviewing and giving a chance for open positions to some of our students. So, in the grand scheme of things, most of the students who are hired out of our program are going to businesses that are right here in Franklin County and who we have had working relationships with for most of them years now.
So it brings the question to me about something like right now it's the season, right? And you have a horticulture program. Do people from your horticulture program go out and work on their own? Do they have to? I mean, how does that differ, for instance, from something like electrical or plumbing where you do need to go through the apprenticeship? Do you have to do that with horticulture as well?
Great question. Not necessarily. We are very clear with our students that after 12 weeks, they probably will not have a mastery level knowledge of the field. And so we don't necessarily encourage folks hanging out a shingle or starting their own business at first. We do like to inspire and fan the flame of, future entrepreneurs while they are with us. And so if someone has an entrepreneurial spirit, we definitely encourage them to continue through their training, while also being realistic that they're going to have to work, in another capacity for another company or another master until they're able to do that.
Yeah, I think that's important. We see a lot of businesses fail. In fact, most businesses where people just start up a business, they want to make nice business cards and brochures and dream about how the phone is going to ring off the hook, and but they don't necessarily have the skills about segregating their advertising budget and learning what they need to learn to market and sustain and pay their taxes, for instance, right? A lot of self-employed people end up, doing fine for the first year, and then, oh, wow, I owe the IRS a lot of money because I didn't segregate my tax money and pay it in. So I think setting realistic expectations is probably one of the best and kindest things you can do because then they know what they're studying for. They know where they're going to get, and they're prepared to want the next level if they want to get beyond that. But it gets them into a place where they're able to make, hopefully, a stable income in the field that they want to be working in. And it's quite a leap. I mean, you are transforming somebody's life. I don't think that's overstating this. When you take somebody from food service and put them into automotive repair, that's a transformation. Now, you could do it the other way and it would still be a transformation, right? But that brings with it a whole list of different things, that a different culture, a different experience, a different sense of self, perhaps. And so I think that's a really, really powerful thing. Can you briefly tell me what you do for outreach now to make sure that people know that these programs are available, and what your utopian dream might be for Franklin County Tech School adult program?
Sure. So a quick shameless plug is we have more than just the CTI programs. And so we are also offering some community workshops, some community classes. The superintendent had given me a directive when I first took this position to make Franklin County Tech feel like the community's school, a resource for everyone in the community, whether they're looking for a new job or they have a high school student. Franklin Tech should feel like home to them. And so we're trying to do that with all of our other programming outside of CTI, supporting entrepreneurs, supporting recreation. And we're getting the word out about all of these programs through our brochure, through our website, through things like this. But honest to goodness, the most effective form of marketing that I have found so far has been twofold. It's been the word of mouth and people talking about their experiences, and also our folks, our friends at Mass Hire. They are so great at sharing what we're doing and the purpose for which we're doing it with the greater community. And they've got such an excellent platform. I'll also take a quick opportunity to mention Greenfield Community College. We have an excellent partnership with them. They host some of their training on our campus, and we work very closely in making sure that although we have similar missions and messages, that we're complementing each other and that we're working together to offer our area the best and most well-rounded education possible. And so through those outlets, we see an excellent return on our marketing investment.
If I sound enthusiastic about Franklin County Technical School, I should say it's not because they sponsor our show, although they do sponsor our show. That just sort of happened organically, right? But this is something that I think is in the community, of the community, and for the community. And I don't see a flaw in that. So I want to thank you again for coming on and chatting with us about this. And I hope you'll come back and maybe share some more stories with us about other students.
I would love to. Thanks for having me.
Justin, do you want to maybe share your website with us before you go?
Absolutely. Yes, people can find us at fcts.us.
Thank you. And Francis, as always, I need your phone number because people will have questions.
Of course. It's 413-773-3333.
And you can go to hugyourmoney.com. And we'll be back next week with another edition of Financial Fitness right here on WHMP.